Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows.
So have you ever heard something, a song lyric or something, and it's just bugged you because you're convinced you've heard it somewhere else, but in a different context, you know? I mean, I've had that ever since I first heard that Lana Del Rey single, Born to Die, you know? Starts with the words, feet don't fail me now. And you know something? I just knew I'd heard that somewhere before. I thought, you know, maybe it's another song lyric or something, and it bugged me. And then finally I remembered. It's something from a film, not one film, several films, apparently. Basically, as I record it, Mandan Moreland, very famous black performer of the 1930s, 40s in films. I was sure he'd said, "Feats don't fail me now," in King of the Zombies, made circa 1942. I was convinced I'd heard him say it in that. Usually, I mean, because this, and I was convinced it was like his catchphrase, that this was something that he always used to say in scenes where something scary is about having him want to run away, but his feet were frozen, you know, he couldn't move. Say, "Feats don't fail me now." So I watched King of the Zombies again, and funnily enough, he didn't say it. there you go, that's memories for you. Actually, by the way, I've done it again, haven't I? Like I did last time, I got ahead of myself. In case you're wondering, you sort of downloaded this by chance or something. This is the Sleazecast, and obviously I'm Doc Sleaze. And you know, I'm not even going to pretend this has got even a sort of vague theme. This one, you know, this is this particular edition. It's just like free association, you know, my random thoughts, you know. See where it takes us is. Go through my mental processes, starting off there with Lana Del Rey and her apparent tribute to Mantan Moreland. So I thought. Anyway, a little bit of research, getting back to this, about Mantan Moreland. Revealed, actually, I was apparently mistaken. In fact, it was another black performer, Willie Best, who had said, "Feats Don't Fail Me Now," famously in the Bob Hope film, The Ghostbreakers. So I watched that again. And do you know, I couldn't find any sequence where he said that. I did a lot of other shtick, but couldn't come across it. And then somebody else told me that, no, Mantan Moreland did say it was a common routine done by black performers in films in that period. So I watched Mantan Moreland again in another film he was in. And so it's a Charlie Chan film. You know, this is the interesting thing with Charlie Chan films. Digression, also made in the 1940s, but Hollywood of the period, it tells us, is a depiction of race. Is that interesting? Mantan Moreland, he plays the Charlie Chan chauffeur, Birmingham Brown. And interesting, they actually have a black man playing a black man, you know. He isn't some white actor like Amos and Andy blacked up. But Charlie Chan, of course, an Oriental, though they thought, God, we can't have an Oriental playing a lead role because he's the lead character. So these are white actors with their eyes taped up and, you know, whatever. This one, it was an actor called Sidney Toler. Unfortunately, his makeup didn't make him look Chinese. It just made him look like Andy Griffiths with constipation. Anyway, getting back to the film, Mantan Moreland does various routines of his routines in it, but he doesn't say, "Feats don't fail me now." he does a whole routine where his feet are shaking and he can't move when he's in this theatre being scared. But I couldn't actually find him anywhere on the soundtrack of certainly the version I saw of him selling Feats Don't Fail Me Now. But anyway, I mean, but what it made me think about, of course, is watching these films. They were quite entertaining in their way. Was of course the appalling way, really, in which non-white performers were treated back at that time. Because I mean, Mantan Moreland and Willie Best were tremendously talented comic performers, but in these films, they always had to play second fiddle to white lead actors. Okay, in the case of Willie Best with Bob Hope at least was quite a big star at the time and an accomplished performer throughout, but poor old Mantan Moreland finds himself playing second fiddle to Dick Purcell, as I recall in King of the Zombies, and another actor whose name now eludes me. I don't have the DVD to hand. I mean, Dick Purcell, I remember his only sort of most famous screen credit, he played Captain America in the 1944 Republic serial. Actually died before that's released, actually, of a heart attack. A little factoid there. Film fans. Yeah. But poor old Mantan Moreland, as I say, he's given a fantastic performance in these films. Very skilled actor, but it's such a... But being forced to portray a person of colour in a very patronising way. The sad thing is, it took at least until the 1970s before that really began. I suppose in the 60s you began to get people like Sidney Poitier getting lead roles in films, but it's still unusual. It's still more often, like even then, that the black guy was the sidekick still, although he was allowed to play it straight by the 60s and 70s, sidekick to still the white leading man. Although at least by then they weren't having to play second fiddle to white blokes pretending to be Orientals, as in the Charlie Chan films. But a lot of casual racism though back at that period. You find it in all forms of popular culture. George Formby. This brings me to. You think he's going mad? How is he jumping from this Mantan Moreland to George Formby? George Formby. Years ago, I wrote a story for The Sleaze, one of the first stories ever published online for The Sleaze, called Turned Out Nazi Again, where I sort of claimed that George Formby had had secret Nazi connections in World War II, and that he'd been Hitler's favourite ukulele playing artist. And that, in those last dark days in the bunker, as Hitler slipped further into madness, he just kept playing his George Formby 33s over and over again. But recently, for various reasons we won't go into here, I went back and listened to some old George Formby tracks. You know, there's a lot of them on archive.org from old 78s, transferred there and cleaned up, the sound quality cleaned up. And it just struck me, you know, how dubious the source of the subject matter was. I mean, let's give you an example. Let's kick you off here with a popular little number he did called Hindu Man. Yeah, have a listen to this.
Over there in India, a Hindu resides, smoking his hokum all day. Opium and bits of rope and fagans besides, a wise man from the East Whitechapel way. He's got a lovely palace on the beach. He's a Hindu, how do, who do, you do, man. He's got 12 bedrooms with 8 wives in each. He's the Hindu, how do, who do, you do, man. He's got one wife who wears a veil, it covers half her face. From her nose right to her toes, you'll see nothing else but space. She'll dance and waggle her sand fairy hand. For the Hindu, how do, who do, you do, man. He practices his magic in the Eastern Bazaar. Slave girls come under his spell. When he puts what's on the fluence, they don't know where they are. He does Indian tricks and dirty tricks as well. Now what he fancies always does him good. He's the Hindu, how do, who do you do, man?
Yeah, I mean, you know, is it any wonder Gandhi was busy yeah, urging his fellow Indians to rise up in peaceful protest against the British rule in India. I mean, you obviously had heard that, for God's sake. I mean, quite apart from the fact it's just deeply offensive. I mean, its whole idea of what Hindus are actually like is, yeah, it's just taken Hindu to mean obviously any kind of darky wallah chap who is obviously isn't a Christian. Yeah, I mean, words fail me. They really do. But he didn't stop at that, did he? I mean, you know, have a listen to this one. I mean, you know, I think actually the title of this one tells you all you need to know. It's called Lazy Turk. Just listen to a little bit of it and then we'll be back.
A Turk inside his harem, he smokes his Turkish pipe. He sits on his Turkey carpet and he eats his Turkish stripe. The way he'll sleep just makes you weep. Though he's umpteen wives to keep, he's a low-down lazy Turk. He'll do anything but work. In his harem every night, he'll nibble and bite his Turkish delight. Then when he retires, at him his wives all smirk. He won't do much embracing, cause all night the wall he's facing. He's a low-down lazy Turk. He's very bashful, that low-down lazy Turk.
Yeah, I mean, well, you can see a theme emerging here. Basically, all these damn Johnny foreigners, darky Johnny foreigners. They you know, it's how they always seem to have harems and various numbers of wives, and they never do any work or anything. Yeah, yeah. Obviously, a bit of envy there, you know. Yeah, you know, they're getting too much. You know, they're getting their end away, and poor old George in Lancashire, obviously, not getting any. And it has been said, actually, his wife made sure he didn't get any on the side. But again, that's another story. Anyway, but you'd think, come World War II, you know, because we were part of this broad alliance of nations fighting the Axis forces, you'd think, you know, be a bit more tolerant, you know, a more liberal attitude here. And, you know, you... got one coming up now, or you think maybe this is where George sort of, you know, says they're really okay, these foreign people. And this one, indeed encouraging, it's titled Mr. Wu is now an air raid warden. You think, well, maybe showing positions of responsibility, we don't discriminate against people for these. Just have a listen to this though.
There's a Chinese laundryman, the famous Mr. Wu. He's chucked his Limehouse laundry shop and his window cleaning too. He's got another job and it's one of the best. Now he's doing his bit for England like the rest. And Mr. Wu is now an air raid warden, and don't he look cute in his new siren suit. He goes round every night to make the blackout sure. So if you've got a chink in your window, hey, you'll have another one at your door. His headquarters, it's plain, are down by Lover's Lane, and he goes there every evening anyhow. He'll flash his torch into the dark, and the girls all cover their laundry mark, cos Mr. Wu's an air raid warden now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you've got a chink in your curtains, you will have... one at your door too. Oh, for God's sake, George, you racist bastard. I mean, there's a bloody war raging. China's been invaded by the friggin' Japanese, and you're going around still calling Chinese people chinks. Jesus Christ, you buck-tooth racist Lancashire bastard.
Now, back to Bold Venture, our stars Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall, and the second act of our story.
Pardon me, Senor Shannon, but I think perhaps you were looking for me. For Bibi. No, Senor?
Well, I don't know you, but I think perhaps I was looking for you. For Bibi.
Slate.
Still, you have not answered my question, Senor Shannon. You look for me?
Well, I look for a lot of things. Why particularly for you?
Because you are the man who brought his boat into port only a little while ago.
Oh, the lady wants a cock ride.
This is included in the price we must pay for the merchandise?
No, Bibi. I throw that in for free.
I have room 6A. I will wait for you there. But give me 10 minutes to arrange for more money. When I pay your price, there will be no more delay. Is it final? It is final.
Now, let's see. 6A, she said.
That's what she said, Slate. That's just what she said.
You know, sailor, I think I can handle this alone. Why don't you wait for me downstairs, huh? Sit down, BB. Don't struggle, Fiend. Relax. Enjoy yourself. I'm a tender guy. I'm taking you back to Havana.
Fool! Take your hands off me! Let me go!
Come on, come on. I'm holding you real tight.
You hold her that tight, she's not going to be in any condition. Slate, look. Look. Her face. Her body.
Slashed to ribbons. Slashed to death by a cock. The trick I know. Why don't you get out of here, sailor? Why don't you go back to the States? Look at the mess. I'm in it, you're in it. Why don't you leave, sailor?
You don't know, do you? Sit down, Slate. You want me to fend you? I'll fend you. You like me to fend you, Slate? Like this? You're sweating. How long can you keep it up, Slate? I said, how long can you keep it up?
Sailor, I can't do it.
You can touch it, Slate. Touch it. Go ahead. Touch it.
Sailor, I can't do it.
Oh, Senor Slate!
You killed him.
It's a trick I know. You happy now, sailor? You real happy?
What?
You came to Havana. You got what you came for, huh? Excitement, romance, a tropic moon, people killed.
Why you...
Got a cock in your hand, haven't you, sailor?
Oh, sure. Sorry. I forgot for a moment.
Don't slap me, sailor.
Slate, how could you? Maybe I'll faint.
Yeah, I was recently I read an article in one of the papers. What it was looking at was the whole concept of body image and particularly the way the female body has been presented in art over the centuries. I mean, what they'd done is about this project where they'd taken some sort of old Renaissance nude paintings. And they'd use digital technology to make the nude ladies in them conform in their body shape to current standards of concepts of what from popular media today you'd assume would be sort of an ideal female shape, i.e. they made them look really skinny. Yeah, like today's like supermodels and whatever. Whereas the Renaissance ladies were not overweight or anything. They were just, rather healthier looking, basically. more rounded, you know, normal, I would say. Because it's interesting how our idea of beauty obviously changes. It's obviously very, very subjective. I mean, you know, obviously beauty lies in the eye of the beholder. And in Renaissance times, obviously, as well, until fairly recent times, of course, a degree of, I don't know, plumpness, perhaps. I mean, I'm not putting that, but, you know, it was considered, because that was a sign of good health, because, you know, only poor people looked thin and emaciated, and they clearly weren't in a good state of health. Whereas today, of course, for whatever reasons, the whole idea of thinness and whatever has become apparently desirable. So the media tells us, and at least to a lot of women I know, sort of worried about their body shape and whatever, and that, you know, various bits of the body, some are unattractive, you know, they worry about, you know, got a fat arse, or fat, they really, their backsides are, look too fat or whatever. And, you know, this is something that always sort of puzzles me, because, you know, you just don't seem to understand a lot of women. You know, many of us men, we prefer, you know, the lady with the broader behind. You know, I'm not saying women with fat asses as such, you know. What I'm saying is, you know, there's something appealing about the broader behind. You know, I mean, you know, sort of thing, you know, you could, yeah, I do prefer the sort of behind, perhaps you could balance an ashtray on. Oh, God, actually, well, that's not very PC, is it? Because, I mean, you know, mentioning ashtrays, they might be considered we're encouraging smoking. And that's wrong. Filthy habit. I don't know. Balance a tea tray on. That'd be better. Say, you know, seriously, you know, there's a lot to be said for the broader. I mean, I'm not a fan of women with gargantuan breasts, you know. I mean, like Pamela Anderson, or I don't know, Jordan or whatever, Katie Price, what she calls herself these days. They always look rather sort of top heavy. I'm always scared they sort of fall over, whatever. But nothing wrong with the broader behind. I mean, you know, I mean, you're going to have to assume here with what I'm going to say next that just assume for the sake of this, I'm some sad old perv who spends his time looking at sad Russian pornography sites. I mean, I could tell you I came across this site whilst doing research for a story for the sleaze, but you just wouldn't believe me. So to cut to the chase, I think it was a couple of years, last year, maybe the year before, I came across this Russian it's a spanking site, Russian spanking site, okay. You know, it's you know, yes, I look at porn. Yeah, I'm not going to be quite as open as the late Bill Hicks was about his love of pornography here, you know. But you know, I'm like most men, you know, I look occasionally at porn sites. But in all honesty, I actually was genuinely doing research at this time. But you won't believe that. So anyway, I was looking at this spanking site. But the thing that struck me, fascinating though it was, this site, that, you know, a lot of the girls didn't have particularly good asses. You know, and you'd have thought, if it's a site about spanking, you know, you don't want to see some skinny ass getting spanked or some flat ass getting spanked. You want to see a proper round of women's behind being spanked. You know, there's just something about it. You know, you know, perhaps it's the motion of the buttocks as they're whacked away. But there's just something more, and I'm talking hypothetically here, not from practical experience. There is something more satisfying about spanking. Or seeing spanked, the broader behind. Simple as that, you know. It's just one of those things. I'm saying to ladies out there, you know, I mean, obviously, I don't just like the broader behind for spanking purposes. All right, let's make that clear. I just find it aesthetically more satisfying than the skinny ass or the flat behind, whatever, you know. You know, just something I like, you know. So what I'm trying to say out here to ladies is, you know, forget all this nonsense you see in the media about you have to be really skinny. You, trust me. There's a lot of us out here think that broader behind, the broader beam is highly appealing. I mean, it's probably why I like American cars, with the width and all that. You know, there's just something appealing about it. So that's a bad analogy there. I appear to be trying to compare your behind, say, to the rear end of a 1978 Chevrolet Camaro Z28, which I happen to used to own, actually. But I'm not. Although the back end of that was aesthetically very pleasing. The way it's laid out, the way the spoiler and the lights were laid out. Anyway, I'm fighting a losing battle here, aren't I? I'm just digging myself in deeper. So let's cut to the news with Susie Sleaze.
I'm Susie Sleaze with the latest news. Bill slapped my buttocks like a pair of bongo drums all night long, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has told the Senate Foreign Affairs Committee, in answer to questions about her recent official visit to Africa. She denied press allegations that the frenzied rhythm of the former president's buttock bashing had instigated a tribal uprising in Uganda, when it was mistaken for the sound of war drums. Meanwhile, back in the UK, it has been categorically denied that former Prime Minister Tony Blair had ever held talks with President Bush to establish an international agency aimed at the early detection of lesbianism in famous women. Alarmed by the number of favorite celebrity penupias who had turned gay in recent years, including Ellen DeGeneres, Kate DeLange and Samantha Fox, Tony Blair had been said to have been considering using the combined intelligence resources of the West to monitor his other favorite actresses and entertainers for signs of impending lesbianism. At no time was it suggested that satellite imagery, communications intercepts or close surveillance be used to see if Jodie Foster or Calista Flockhart had taken to wearing comfortable shoes, said a spokesman for Mr. Blair. Finally, X Factor judge and Ann Dubs singer Tulsa Canto Stablose has apologized to fans for not looking as hot naked as they might have thought she would after an illicit sex video featuring her was released onto the web. I know my fans probably had higher expectations for my knockers, she told a press conference. And I am sorry to have shattered their masturbatory fantasies by having a disappointingly ordinary pair. However, X Factor producer Simon Cowell has said that the tape will not affect Tulsa's role in the show. Despite the criticism of them, I'm convinced that her gazonkas will put at least 2 million on the viewing figures for the next series, he declared. Everyone at home will want to compare her cleavage with what they've seen on their laptops. Hopefully they'll divert attention from the dire acts we feature every week. That's all for now. More news soon.
Okay, here we are. Back in my kitchen for some more movie musings while I make a cup of tea again. I was going to vary it this time, so, you know, make a cup of coffee, but what the hell I said here, why change a winning formula? So, on with the kettle, and on with the ramble about movies. The 60s. Yeah, the 60s. We all know the way the 60s are depicted now in popular culture and in films. You know, hey man, lots of hippies, swinging man, you know, Vietnam War, Jimi Hendrix, all that. Beatles, great, you know. But what I find interesting is looking back to films actually made in the 60s and the way they depict what to them was the contemporary world. And it's fascinating that often it doesn't conform to our preconceptions of what the 60s were like. You know, there were films, obviously, that played on this whole swinging 60s ideas. They usually starred Roger Moore and, you know, had him wandering with some bewildered-looking advertising executive involved in espionage, unwittingly wandering around sort of, you know, Carnaby Street and whatever, romancing girls in short skirts. But look at other films of the period, sort of popular culture, probably more popular culture than that. I'm always fascinated by those Disney movies made back in the 60s. You know, the sort of thing I'm talking about. Those Herbie films, The Love Bug. That Darn Cat, Blackbeard's Ghost, one of my favourites actually from that period. These are fascinating because they obviously are clearly made in the 60s, 60s suburban America usually, and often feature as major characters young people. I mean, Blackbeard's ghost I found particularly interesting because it has as part of its setting, a college or a high school. What's fascinating is it's full of this particular educational establishment, and Blackbeard's ghost is full of these young people who all have like neat crew cuts and wear blazers and ties, even when they're not at school. It's fascinating. None of them, not a single one of them, is holding up a placard protesting the Vietnam War. In fact, nowhere is it ever mentioned there's a bloody war going on in Southeast Asia and they're probably about to be drafted. Nobody's saying, hey, wow, did you hear about Randy from the football team last year? He lost both his legs out in Nam. Doesn't happen. Neither are there any sort of nobody's, I mean, not surprisingly perhaps, for a Disney film, nobody's smoking dope. I say nobody's got hair down below their collar. Nobody's exploring alternative philosophies. Nobody dresses like a hippie or anything. I seem to remember in The Love Bug, we glimpse a couple of like hippie-like characters, aren't they? Sort of driving some sort of hot rod of some kind who challenge whoever it was who starred in The Love Bug. He appeared in a lot of those films. But anyway, whoever he was, they challenge him whilst he's in that VW Beetle, sort of impromptu drag race, as I recall, from a set of red lights. But again, it's a rather odd sort of middle-aged conception of what a rebellious youth was like then, wasn't it? I mean, they always seemed to merge into one in the imaginations, not just of Disney, but of other filmmakers of the piece. Beatniks and hippies, who are actually two rather different things. And even Hell's Angel scene, they seem to drift into in some films as well. All very different things. And they always seem to listen to young people, and this is the thing, they never listen to what we would consider to be contemporary at the time, popular music. I mean, not a one of them seems to listen to the Rolling Stones or Pink Floyd. I mean, occasionally you'll find in a film that the Beatles get Goldfinger, there's an example. In 1964, Goldfinger was made, has a disparaging reference to the Beatles in it. You know, the biggest thing in popular culture, bigger probably than even Bond at that time, you know, or at least about to become bigger than Bond. They're sort of dismissed, isn't it? You know, it's some remark about it's doing something rather is be rather like listening to the Beatles without earmuffs, Sean Connery says. You know, middle age before his bloody time there, eh? I say, for some reason, they always seem to think this has persisted well over the 70s. It's the idea that young people listen to jazz music. You'll find that also, I say, in the 70s. Several British horror movies actually perpetuate that one. Tower of Evil, most notably, with Robin Asquith. A film we recommended as very early on, he gets impaled to a door by a Phoenician spear. And a young actress who's a very promising actor called Candace Glendening spends most of the film stark naked. And that killed her career, trust me. Didn't see her again after that. Actually, no, that's not quite true. She wasn't. She was in Satan's Slaves, wasn't she? Norman J. Warren film, but that's something you wouldn't put on your CV. Getting back to the point, yeah. Even as late as 1972 with Dracula Lady, 1972, we've got young people listening to jazz music. You know, again, it reflects the fact that certainly in that period, films were made by middle-aged people, basically, you know. It was only towards the end of the 60s that this thing of younger people actually coming into the film business and beginning to actually be able to direct movies themselves and script them, begin to reflect what they thought was the actual popular culture of the time. Because the question here, of course, is, were the 60s really like the way they're portrayed in these films? Are they an accurate portrayal of what it was really like for most people, i.e., pretty normal, button-down, conventional? Or is our popular conception right, that it was all swinging 60s madness, this time of social revolution and everything? Or are we simply retrospectively imposing that idea on the 60s? So we think anything that doesn't show it isn't authentic, although in actual fact, it is our concept which is inauthentic. I mean, you know, it's the point my father often used to make, you know, that back in the 60s when things were meant to be swinging up in, you know, they may well have been swinging up in Ladbroke Grove, but we didn't see much of that permissive society down, you know, down in Wiltshire where we lived. But there you go. I mean, unfortunately, I'm too young really to remember exactly what it was like. I mean, I am a child of the 60s, but I only have the vaguest recollections of the latter part of them, the very latter part of them. So I don't know. What were they really like?
In spring, a young man's fancy tells him it's just delightful to be in a bee-in. And that's what this is. Another exotic prank to add to a growing list of student-oriented rites of spring. It's sort of a happy happening for hippies. You're out if you're not in a bee-in, the recurring theme of which is love one another. Seattle's bee-in is the latest chapter of Fresh Air Frolics, perfect for group therapy. In this age of protests, one of the most recent finds 4,000 Londoners decrying British support for U.S. action in Vietnam. There were a few minor scuffles, but no arrests. The demonstrators were stopped from approaching Prime Minister Wilson's Downing Street home. Organized by the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, mimics of Queen Elizabeth presented mock medals and said the war was a wicked obscenity. Madrid University, scene of the largest anti-American rally in recent years. Posters, leaflets, slogans, and student speeches all carried a vehemence seldom seen here before. Some 3,000 undergraduates attended. An American flag is burned at the height of the demonstration. Both President Johnson and Francisco Franco were vilified. A new low in public protest added strain on Spanish-American relations. Over 4,000 anti-hate people jammed Detroit's Belle Isle Park in another example of the recent social phenomenon that's sweeping the country. It's a giant love-in, close relative to the bee-in. Sort of a happy happening laced with the rites of spring. The slogans were just as frank as ever. Hippies, would-be hippies, and just plain folks made a colorful scene with wild costumes, uninhibited dancing, and general high frolic. Group therapy like this outdrew the Detroit Tigers that day. The end, man. Official U.S. Navy films show our jet fighter bombers plastering North Vietnam communication and boat repair facilities. Bridges, bypasses, and storage areas were also blasted by Skyhawk and Phantom jets from the aircraft carrier Kitty Hawk. Peking claimed the raids, quote, blatantly intruded into Chinese airspace. Our pilots hit only military targets. Air Force jets struck close to Hanoi once again, and the ground war moved to within 10 miles of the North Vietnam border.
Well, that's a little medley there, if you like, of soundtracks and some newsreels, maybe Universal, from the year 1967, which actually was the last year that Universal produced cinema newsreels. Again, you can find these, the complete thing, on archive.org in the moving images section. You find a complete collection there of Universal newsreels, all open source. But what's interesting is, of course, the reason I include these here is because that's a contemporary view of the 60s, and it is an interesting sort of oscillation between, you know, hippie, you know, love-ins with anti-war protests, very violent anti-war protests, and, you know, bombing Vietnam. So you see the extremes there in the 60s. And of course, to remember, of course, again, it's a very establishment view of what the 60s were like, 1967 was like. So again, you know, is it really what it was like? I don't know. As I say, I am fortunately too young to remember. I was very young in 67. All I can tell you about 1967, remember that, is some of my earliest memories are from that period. I remember my sister buying the Sgt. Pepper album and bringing it home and driving my father insane by keep playing it over and over again. I grew up thinking Ringo was like a wacky uncle. I felt that way. My sister was such a big Beatles fan. But yes, I mean, as I say, the 60s, what were they really like? To what extent were those Disney films accurate with their, say, button-down version of the 60s? I don't know. Certainly the establishment had real problems with what they saw, all this sort of youth culture and whatever growing up. And I do like their particular view in these in those newsrooms we just heard. The idea that in Spain organising protests against General Franco somehow constitutes a new low. I see. So yeah, we shouldn't condemn fascist dictators. Yeah, there you go. Right on, man. There you go. As I say, the 60s. What were they like? Depends where you were, I suppose. Anyway, there you go. Well, that's all for this time, folks. Just time, really, to say thanks for listening. This was the Sleazecast, and it featured me, Doc Sleaz, and was produced by me, Doc Sleaz. So what remains now is to be played out by Mr. George Formby. I don't think so, you buck-toothed racist bastard.